Oh, hello, everybody. It is Scott, and you are listening to the Verbal Shenanigans Show. Hi, everybody. I'm sorry. I have off from work today. I'm a little loopy, a little punchy, but this is a great episode coming up. I want to talk about the sponsors before. You know how we do this thing. We do the sponsors first. We talk a little bit, and then we get in right into the episode. First sponsor of this podcast is Demented Brewing, located in Middlesex, New Jersey. If you've never been to Demented, one, you should. It's just a really cool place to go and visit. It has this huge tap room with 16 different beers, and they're always expanding, always doing something interesting. And it's a really cool vibe. If you look on the walls, there's like this mural of demons and devils and all that kind of fun stuff that goes on in my head, but they put it on the wall. It's just a great place. Every Sunday, they release a new beer. They have a barrel program, sour program that you can become part of. They just released Sloth, which was their milk stout, on Sunday. And this Sunday, they're going to be releasing Gallows Hill, which is a New England IPA. Also in awesome news for Demented, they are getting a crowler station, a crowler fill station in March. Now, if you don't know what a crowler is, it basically means like can growler. Yeah, like you get whatever beer you want, they seal it up in a can, and they give it to you, a nice 32-ounce can. It's awesome. I love it. Okay, so go to Demented Brewing. Check them out on Instagram and Facebook, and show them some love. Now, Manskirt Brewing is another brewery that sponsors this podcast. Massive updates going on in that brewery. It's located in Hackettstown, up in New Jersey. You could do a whole brewery tour up there, three or four different breweries now. But Manskirt Brewing is located in the old bank building there on Main Street. Now, they have a lot of seasonally inspired ales, like this week. Okay, they got a lot of news going on. They have a 9.2 ABV English barley wine coming out this week called Innkeeper. Okay, their Weizenbach comes back on tap this week. That one's called Luftweizen. Luftweizen! Luftweizen! Drink that Luftweizen! That's an 8% ABV dark German wheat beer. You can still get tickets for the Big Brew Fest on March 4th. If you use the code MANSKIRT, you get a $15 discount. So you should definitely use that, okay? Get yourself $15 off. They did a lot of things. They added new seating. They added a place to play chess. They added a lot of different things in the brewery to make it just a fun place to go sit and taste some delicious beer. Now, they also have a bottle release of two barrel-aged beers, Wee Bastard and Innkeeper. They're taking pre-orders at the brewery now, and they should be ready in about a month or so. So lots of news coming there out of Manskirt. Give them some love. Facebook, Instagram, go check out Manskirt. Now, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. To tie it all in, Trivia Revolution does trivia all over the state of New Jersey. And you can win prizes to the restaurant, like at Tap House 15, where I host on Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock. Or you could win prizes to New Jersey craft breweries, even if you're in last place. Okay, so go check them out. Go check out the bonus item every week and follow them on Instagram at Trivia Revolution. Okay, today on the podcast, a few years ago, actually it was about 10 years ago, there was this coach, Jim Johnson, and he put in this autistic kid that was his team manager for 3 or 4 years into a basketball game. And the rest was history. And if you look it up on YouTube and whatnot, you could find it. Look up Jay Mack and Jim Johnson, and you'll see that. And we have Coach Jim Johnson on the podcast. Just a very inspirational story, inspirational interview. Really nice guy. So please make sure to listen. We also talk about my case of the dumbs getting worse. We talk about Berlew's visit to a tea house. All right. And we talk about Emperor Trump. So. Fun episode. Remember, you can listen on Laughable. You can listen on Podbean. You can listen on iTunes. You can listen on Stitcher. Please give it a listen and leave us a review and subscribe. With that, enjoy the podcast.
Hey, this is Coach Jim Johnson, and you're ready to listen to Verbal Shenanigans.
But Verbal Shenanigans are cheap. Yeah. Verbal Shenanigans are tragic. Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Oh, hello, Mike Berlew. I'm supposed to sing back, like, be a little enthusiastic that there's another episode of this show you've dedicated all your time for. And, I mean, look where we are in our careers. Look. I mean, I got $60 in charges on international calls that I can't afford.
I have a Bigfoot guy who won't talk to me anymore.
You got a Bigfoot guy. You got the firemen don't like you. Let's see. What other negatives have happened? A lot of people that I like try to pursue that say they do the podcast don't get back to me.
Sean Kemp,
Anthony Green, Vinny from Orange County Chompers. They all say they'll do it, and then when I follow up, it's like I'm doing something wrong. Anyway,
the bear people.
The bear guy I pissed off. That one hurts the most because we do a segment called Bear News.
Yeah.
I don't have one. That would be a perfect point. Like, if we planned what we were supposed
Scott
to say.
Scott, edit point.
Where I'd be like, bear news. And we'd be like, oh, we got three news stories. But I don't have anything planned.
We're really prepared. We're both tired right now.
I am extremely tired. I still have a case of the dumbs.
Mm-hmm.
Update. Case of the dumbs hit a new...
Dumb update.
Dumb date. for those of you who are new to the show, which is most of you... I was telling Mike how the last 3 weeks or so, I feel really dumb, really kind of off, like not firing on all cylinders. My comedy's been a little like, this weekend was okay, but my comedy's been a little bleh, like kind of messing up, fumbling on words.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to work the other day, and all of a sudden I hear a call on the loudspeaker. Anyone with a gray Nissan, please call back. I have a gray Nissan, but, you know, usually they would say,
it's not me.
They would say gray Nissan pickup truck, you know? Yes. I know you guys think I drive a Bugatti because of this show and the success of this show, but I'm a common man.
That Nissan sponsorship was just huge. Yeah. I mean,
I'm a common man.
I mean, see us during the Super Bowl this weekend, you know, we'll be, you know, we'll have that commercial painting man.
Lady Gaga's ass is going to have our logo on it.
Yeah.
Yep.
She wouldn't call me the Burl, so I was very upset. Not even her.
Well, no one will. so I get the call, and I'm like, it's not me. And then I'm like, kind of like getting nervous. Like, I have a gray Nissan. I'm like, all right. So I call back, and I'm like, I have a gray Nissan, but it probably wouldn't mean. They're like, oh, well, yeah, it's license plate J, blah, blah, blah. I'm like,
That's not me. Now, but on hypothetical, I found that person.
Now, at this point, I didn't know if I was it got hit or it's like over the line or I don't know, something. Case of the dumbs, what do you think I did?
I'm going to say handicap.
No. I might be handicapped, but no.
Not that. Lights.
No. Worse.
Worse than lights.
Worse. Way worse than lights. Worse than both.
Flat tire?
No. Dumbs.
Dumb.
What would make me really dumb? Flat tire.
Left the engine on?
Left the car running. Keys in the engine running for 2.5 hours.
That's when you know you got a really good car, when it's just sitting there for the picking and everybody's like, nah.
Nah, I don't need that.
The insurance alone is not worth it.
I mean, he's got all the speaker equipment in the back. What am I going to do with that? You know, how many coffee cups can one man have? Mm-hmm. Come on, but yeah, left my car running. Never in my life. I really don't think I've ever done that. And sometimes I've seen cars running and be like, oh, did someone leave this on? And like, I'm that guy.
Yeah, I've left maybe once left my keys in my car. I left it unlocked, but I've never heard of a scenario 2 hours.
Yeah. Well, because, I go into work.
Why do I have no gas?
I put my stuff down. It'd be funny if I left it all, no one even know, all day, just hop back in the car and, go away.
Ah, nice and toasty. That was a good idea.
It'd be like the most anti-green movement ever. I let my car idle for a day. Because I don't believe in global warming.
I'm right with you, President Trump. Screw those Chinese.
Let's build that pipeline, baby. Case of the dumbs is in full effect. I got a case of the dumbs. I got a case of a sore, butt bone, you could say.
Okay.
So I play in a volleyball league.
Yeah.
Me and the girlfriend play. I got her into the volleyball this summer, and now we're playing in a co-ed league. Not going to brag or anything, but It's a little below my ability level.
Okay.
Now, I'm not great, but I can hit the ball.
Well, you're 6'6". I should hope you have some sort of advantage.
Right, right. And we play with a lot of guys who – we got one guy who ninja kicks the ball. Like, it comes to him. His first reaction is, I saw Mortal Kombat. Let's roundhouse it, roundhouse the ball. We got another girl who thinks she's, like, the captain of the team, which she technically is because she signed the team up. But, no, like, she has no, like, moving ability. Then we have this young, like – I know he's gay, but this gay black kid who dresses street, but our colors are hot pink. Didn't pick him, by the way. The league picks him. Mm-hmm. And somehow he has pink everything to match it, pink headband, pink socks with purple shoes. And like he just made – so he's pretty
– If he has pink laces, it's over.
Yeah, he's like he has the ability, like athletic ability, where he could be good eventually. And he approaches – like he just got to learn like – some of the technical stuff, where to be. Then we have another Indian guy. We have two Minajes on the team. They're both named Minaj.
Okay.
The other guy...
Is that a common name in India?
Or just in volleyball. I don't know. So we have the one...
They're Volleyball Hall of Fame. Nothing but Minajes everywhere.
They're like, it'd be funny if they came from this amazing family of volleyball players, like Minaj the third. And then these two got kicked out of India because they just had no skill and they're embarrassed from their family.
Like the father's like George Foreman. He just names all his kids Minaj. He's like, Minaj number 8 and 12. Get out of my house.
Do you know what Grandpa Minaj did in the World Volleyball Classic Championships?
It was India versus Sweden, 1968. Mm-hmm. They were down by two sets.
Mm-hmm.
And your grandfather went in there and he served 8 aces in a row to win the set. And they made a miraculous comeback.
Now I know volleyball is not the most manly of... Like you don't.
Oh,
say,
it's a pretty physical.
It's
one.
Pretty amazing. Like it's the to me it's at not my the age, like it's the best thing to play because it's the injury risk is minimal. It's usually if you fall or trip, you could fall literally jogging.
Knees,
so,
pretty much.
Yeah, but as far as hitting each other, basketball, I gave up because I still have a blown out ankle. I should tell a story real quick.
All right.
The last time I played, I played basketball. I was playing at the gym. I used to be pretty decent at basketball. I played a lot at the park and pick up games. And I stopped playing basketball before I went to high school. I should have played basketball in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I was always representable, not terrible.
Yeah.
So I'm playing at the gym one day, and they had a basketball court in the gym I was at the time. And I go off for a rebound, come down, blow the shit out of my ankle, blow it up. And it swelled. The next day, I was I got to go to work. I get out of bed. And I couldn't even walk on it. I had to go down the stairs on my ass, on my butt, and scoot down because I couldn't do it. And
so that's how you hurt your butt bone today.
No. so since then, you could even see it. My ankle is still kind of swollen, especially when the weather,
okay.
It's weird. So I hadn't played
for showing your leg.
I know. I want to, keep some energy going.
A little fresh shenanigans here.
But then my buddy convinced me, he's like, can you play basketball in a fundraiser for diabetes? I'm like, what am I going to say?
The
no.
Great comeback.
It was a 3v3 tournament, okay? And it was in Wallington, New Jersey. So we're playing. Now, you think a tournament, 3 hours, 4 hours? It's going to go quick games. You'd play a game. It'd be an hour. You'd play another game. It'd be an hour. We ended up playing 7 games.
Wow.
There was a fight. It was just all at war. They did a tricky train. They did a 2-hour lunch break. And I'm like, oh my God. We end up making it to the finals. Mm-hmm. Now, me and my buddy are the same height. So we had some rebounding and he could shoot and I would get some boards. And the other guy was a point guard. So we had a good chemistry.
All right,
kind of.
All right.
We never played together, but we had a good mix of type of player. We get to the finals, and we basically play the NBA, the Miami Heat.
Mm-hmm.
We play 3 ginormous black men, and they all had jerseys, like
custom jerseys.
It was like a kid's like sports movie, like where we had, that was a team we would have to beat that was unbeatable, like Mighty Ducks. That was that was the other team.
That's UConn women's team versus Wichita State. Mm-hmm. Okay, okay.
So we're playing them, and they are just nicest guys in the world, but they are just toying with us. Mm. I go to pivot, and one guy set a pick on me so hard, I was like, I hit it like with my face, and I was like, vision got blurry for a minute. He was like built like a brick, like just a wall of a man. They probably beat us. I think the games were 21-3.
At least you got your three.
We, like, trying to block him. I'm a pretty tall guy. Guy probably had 3 inches of me, and he's just effortlessly banging him in. And it was just I was sore for like 6 days after it. We probably played 8-9 games of basketball after not playing for like 3 years because of the ankle thing. Mm-hmm. So that was the last time I played basketball. That's actually a good story for this podcast, for the guests we have coming on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, I back to my butt. I went
always about that.
It's always about my butt. Mm-hmm. So I went to go to bump something, and the kid fell down. I did like a front flip kind of over him, and I landed on my tailbone, and immediately I was seeing stars. Like when people say you see stars, I was literally seeing like the blurry dots, and like for the next few like serves over, I couldn't, like, my eyes couldn't focus, all because I blasted my tailbone. So I'm a little sore. I also came down on my ankle weird. Getting old sucks is the moral of that story.
How old are you?
I am 32.
Okay. No. Yeah, that's ancient.
33 soon.
Yeah. Oh, well, that makes...
You, on the other hand, you're basically a bag of dust at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My ankle's fine.
I got good ankles.
I got good ankles, son.
But why don't we intro our guest?
Sure, sounds good. I didn't even try to do anything.
Sure, sounds good. Like...
Go ahead, Sonny. Extra, read all about it. Verbal Shenanigans, have a guest.
Those of you who, like, if you ever think, like, if there's ever a moment where you're like, man, they might have pre-recorded something, just rewind it to where Burley goes, sure, what's next? Like, yes, we did an interview.
Uh-huh.
Burley, I told you, like, I don't know if you, we talked about this before, but years ago there was a video on ESPN about a coach who, he put in an autistic kid in like one of the last games of the season for the last 5 minutes of a game, and the kid drained like six three-pointers.
And the crowd went nuts. 20 points led his team in that game.
Just amazing story. And we got to interview him, Coach Jim Johnson. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be one of my favorite interviews we've done on this show.
Yeah.
Which, again, you never really know who's going to turn out great and who you're going to cut from the show. But
is that an inside joke?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is Coach Jim Johnson.
Let's do it.
Hello, Jim Johnson.
Coach Jim Johnson, how are you, buddy? This is Scott Brennan and Mike Berlow here from Verbal Shenanigans.
Awesome. How are you doing, Scott and Mike?
We are doing wonderful.
Evening, Coach.
So, Coach, first off, how many people, when they type in your name or look for you, confuse you with the other coach, Jimmy Johnson?
You know, it's funny. I know, you know, years ago when I first got into speaking after the game, I had a funny story with, I was speaking in Dallas, and I had a driver picking me up, and he had a sign, Coach Jim Johnson. He said a number of people came up to him, but they weren't looking for me, of course. You know, because Jimmy Johnson is not coaching anymore, although he's still on TV, I think... it's probably not as significant as it once was, but so.
So, Jim, you've come a long way. Where now you? Well, we'll get to your speaking and things you do currently. But you were, from what I understand, you got a job as a varsity basketball coach quite a long time ago. And this is kind of where this all started, right?
That is correct.
Okay, so where did you coach, and what year did you start?
So I coached total for 35 years. I was a head coach for 30 years at the high school level. I did coach 2 years of my 35 as an assistant in college. And then I, in my last 20 years, I coached at a high school, actually, that I grew up in that town. Our town had three high schools when I grew up and now has four. But so I actually went to one of the high schools. And I was actually the head coach at two of the other ones. So I kind of hit my hometown pretty good in my career.
Now, was that the plan, like going into the professional world? Was that your what you wanted to do? You wanted to be a coach?
I did. My dad was actually a teacher and actually my high school basketball coach, and I really wanted to when I was in high school, I wanted to play in the NBA, but when I got to college and didn't make my college team, I realized that I wasn't going to play in the NBA. but that was kind of a really what I really wanted to do as I wanted to teach and coach. And in my early 20s, I thought about trying to get into the college game, but after I was assistant at a couple different colleges, I realized that high school was really where my heart was. So.
Now, so you're coaching high school, and I was watching one of your speeches earlier that one of your assistants sent to me, or I don't know what you PR person they sent to me, and you were saying that you did not start off like I'm a high school coach myself, also, but you said that you did not have the start that you had envisioned.
No, I didn't. I actually, when I got into coaching, then I quickly wanted to move up the ranks and be a varsity coach. And I actually became a head coach at 25, which is a pretty young age, and thought I knew everything there was to know about coaching. I was excited about the opportunity. And after two games, we were 1-1, and I thought, okay, I've got this.
I got this.
And then, with my great coaching acumen, I led that team to 17 consecutive losses. And then the administration shared with me that they didn't want me to come back. So it was a very humbling experience, but ended up being a great experience because of the fact that I learned a valuable lesson in my life of perseverance, and the fact that I, that burn in my belly by losing that job never went away, that I really wanted to prove that they made a mistake. And but then I got back in the high school level, and I still struggled. My first 7 years as a varsity coach, I was something like 40 games under 500. And then I really got another epiphany that I realized that if I was going to be a better coach, I had to become a better leader. And I really started to study leadership extensively, and things started to change for the better. So, and then we started to have a lot of winning seasons. And then I really ran into a stumbling block where, around in my area, I live in Rochester, New York. We have a postseason tournament called the Section 5 tournament that really all the coaches want to be a champ in that. And we kept losing in our postseason tournament. And in fact, we lost six times in our sectional semifinals. And ironically, the year that Jason J-Mac was a senior, when he had his magical game, then we ended up actually winning our first Section 5 title that year. So it ended up being a really special year for sure.
So, I mean, with such a special story, how did J-Mac come a part of the team initially? Was he just helping out around the team, or was he trying to try out for the team? What was the story behind him?
Yeah, he tried out. I did not know him at all as a freshman, and he actually ran indoor track. But as a sophomore, he started to come into our phys ed office. I was a teacher at the school as well. And one of my phys ed colleagues was my JV coach, and he kept saying to my assistant coach, When's practice start? And after doing that a number of times, I said to Jeff, my assistant, I said, Jeff, who is it? He goes, oh, his name's Jason McElwain. He's autistic. And at that point, that was back in 2003, I did not know much about autism. And he tried out for the JV team. And after a few days of tryouts, Jeff, my assistant, came in and said, Coach, he's not a very good player, but man, he's got a big heart. He loves basketball. I think we should keep him in the program. He says, what do you think we should do? And he goes, I'm going to let him be the team manager, but I'm going to let him practice with the team. And that's what he did. And so he was the team manager for the JVs. And I got to know him a little bit, and that's actually when I tagged the nickname J-Mac, because I had so much trouble pronouncing it. Yeah, exactly. I had so much trouble pronouncing his last name that one day I walked in the JV practice. I had an aha moment, and I said to Jason, come here. And I said, you know how Syracuse, because Syracuse University is about 2 hours from us, and I said, you know how they have GMAC, because they had a guy named Jerry McNamara played on a national championship team.
You got T-Mac,
yeah, I like
right?
GMAC, and I said, well, if Syracuse can have GMAC, Athena's going to have JMAC, and that's how both the name got tagged. And that was what made Jason so unique to me, was that between his sophomore and junior year, he started to come to all our off-season workouts, and I started to really get to know him well, and so, saw his great passion for basketball. And so he tried out for the varsity, the team I coached as a junior, and he didn't make it, but I offered him the team manager's job with the varsity, and that's when he really got into, you know, wanted to help us win the Section 5 championship. And actually his junior year is when we lost in the sectional tournament in the semifinals for the sixth time in my career. And he came back more bound and determined his senior year to make the team and help us win our first Section 5 championship. And he didn't make the team, but when I brought him in his senior year, I said, Jason, unfortunately, you're still not quite good enough to make the team. But I said, but because you've been so loyal and committed, and he's the only player in my 30 years as a head coach that I've ever that ever tried out for the team three times and didn't make it all three. So it really shows a lot about his perseverance and his character. So I said, I'm going to give you a gift for your senior year. And he says, oh, coach, what's that? And I said, I'm going to give you a uniform for senior night, which is our final home game, and hopefully get you in the game. And of course I kid with people that periodically he'd ask me about that uniform during the season. Of course I define periodically as about every other day. He was pretty excited about that. And the really unique part about that season for me, besides his game, was that we actually had a lot of strife internally. We had a assistant coach that we ended up having a lot of issues with the parents, with him, and it was a really difficult time. In fact, I nearly resigned. Unfortunately, my staff and my family said, you know, this is the time you need to be stepping up as a leader. And so I hung in there, and we had a really tough start to the season. But after Christmas, we seemed to finally get things back together, and we had a kind of a winning streak going into senior night, which was on February 15th. And then the magic happened that night. Like, I could have never expected that,
well,
for sure.
Let's get to that in a second. But
sure.
So you had J-Mac with you. Now, did you at any point – okay, now, we know – most of us know what happened on the night – but we're going to talk about it in a second, or for the audience that doesn't know. But did you see flashes of any kind of basketball ability with him, shooting ability, anything like that during practice and whatnot?
Well, yeah, he the one thing about him that I admired him is that he had a great work ethic and he loved basketball. So he would always come to practice early and be shooting, and he'd stay after practice. So I could see that he could shoot pretty well. The thing that was always tricky for him is that he was very small and not very strong and right. not really much of an athlete. So he would have trouble, you know, in the speed of the game, playing,
right.
you know,
transition
the,
all that.
With his skill set. But I knew he could shoot. Now, certainly I didn't expect him to make 6 threes and actually almost 7 threes in less than 4 minutes. But
so let's go to that night. Let's go to that night. Let's go to let me get the date. February 15, 2006. So 10 years ago. 11 years ago now.
Yeah, it'd be 11 years in two weeks. So.
Now, I remember seeing this video on ESPN for a week. Like, it was like at least a week. It was talked about. It was, you know, posted all over the place. And nowadays, like, I imagine if it happened now, with the way social media is now, it'd probably be blasted even more in people's living rooms and people right. sending an inspirational story. Now, take us to what happened, okay? The game's winding down. You got about, I guess, what, 5 minutes left. And you give the kid the nod. You know, you give J-Mac the entrance into the game. And now, oh, the other thing I wanted to ask you was, now, when you have him on the team, was the team completely behind him? Like, were they excited for all this, like, leading up to the event? So if you could address
both
of us.
Well, you know, we you know, the kids knew that he was going to be in uniform, and it was really nice to see him actually, you know, getting introduced in uniform and see him embrace his parents and, you know, in uniform was something that I'll always remember and cherish that memory. But so the players, you know what, though, because we had a lot of strife, although we were seemed to be much better as a team, the, you know, the second half of the year, I wasn't so sure. I knew the kids liked him. They always supported him and everything. But I was really surprised, and it really warmed my heart because, you know, we really tried to build a culture through my whole career of, you know, what the essence of team was. And the interesting thing is I had never asked the players when, you know, the four that were on the court with him to pass him the ball. So that was all out of their own hearts that they decided that they were going to help him get a basket. And, of course, if he made a basket, it turned into many baskets. So. But that was a really cool side part of the story is the fact that they did that all on their own, which was pretty cool.
Now, when I recall, he missed his first two shots. Is that correct?
It is. The first shot, as I kid people, he missed by about 6 feet, and I had to pray, although you're not supposed to pray in the public schools, but I was praying pretty hard. And his second shot, he actually had a much shorter shot from about 10 feet away, and it had a little drama because it did hit the backboard, hit the rim, and it kind of hung on there for a second, then fell off. And so I knew we were getting closer. And then his third shot, which was a three-pointer, was the first shot he made.
Yeah, I mean, that... I mean, I guess after you put him in, you start seeing him making a shot and you miss, and the way you're happy you put him on the court, but I guess there must have been a lot going through your head, like, please make one, please make one, make his day, make the whole school's day.
Right. Well, my whole thing is, you know, because a lot of people ask me over the years, you know, did you think about taking him back out? And I said, no, I wanted to get him in with enough time so that he could score a basket. I thought if he could score a basket, that would be a memory he would always remember. So that was really my main goal when I got him in, was to get him a basket. And when he made the three-pointer, I was just elated. I was, of course, tears were flowing down my face because when he entered the game, you know, the student body gave him a standing ovation. But what Jason and I didn't know is one of our parents decided to make all these placards of Jason's face and put it on paint sticks, and he gave it to the student body. But he didn't tell Jason or myself. So when Jason entered the game, they gave him a standing ovation, and they put all those paint sticks up with the placard. And I got so overwhelmed. I mean, I normally never sit down. I sat down, and tears started to roll down my face. I was so
I'm getting emotional listening to you right now.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
So he hits one. He hits two. You know, hits three, four, five.
Yeah.
Hits 6 3-pointers. And what did he end with, 20 points?
Yeah, it's 6 3-pointers, and actually his other basket that he made was that his foot was on the line. So he's
really
2 inches from having 7. And the interesting thing that, you know, a lot of people don't know because it's not in any of the videos, but one of the threes he did miss, one of his teammates got the rebound and kind of turned and flipped it right back to him. And our opponent that night, I want to give great kudos to Spencerport High School and their coach, Coach Harder. They were great sports that night. But it was really the only time where the other team completely just let him go. And when he received the pass from his teammate after he missed a three, he dribbled in. He had a wide open layup, and he missed it. And yet, you know, he made the 6 threes. And the other thing that was just incredible is how the game ended. I mean, it was really like a Hollywood ending. You couldn't have asked. Spencerport scored with about 10 seconds to go. And Jason had never touched the ball in the backcourt in the 4 minutes. So, you know, he would always run down the court, and then the kids would feed him.
Right.
But the last possession, our guy that took it out of bounds, instead of throwing a point guard, he throws it to J-Mac. And you look up at the clock, and it's ticking down, 10, 9. And I'm watching him dribble up. I'm thinking Spencerport's just going to let him go, and he's going to go in and make a layup and end the game. Oh, no, he stops from like 2 or 3 feet behind the arc. And I'm thinking to myself, Jason, don't shoot from there. That's way too far. And he lets go this big rainbow.
Bomb.
And it swishes. And I look over, and I see our student body. racing on the court. I see our players racing on the court. I think I'm living the movie Rudy.
I was just going to say, it's like a real-life Rudy, but better.
Yeah, it really was. And the other thing that was just so funny that I'll never forget is Jason's parents have an interesting dynamic. His dad is 6'6", and his mom is 5'2". And I see this little bitty lady just bobbing and weaving through the mass of people to get to J-Mac. And then, you know, see the players put them up on their shoulders and get the game ball. And at that point, I had no idea how many points he scored. And our public address announcer comes on and says, the leading scorer for the Trojans tonight, J-Mac, with 20 points. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, you played the whole game. You scored 160 points.
Take that, Will Chamberlain.
It really is unbelievable. Now, I mean, there's got to be, like, after that's over, what is the reaction after a game like that, after something happens like that? Is there like a, do you guys go back in the locker room? Are you celebrating on court? Do you make a speech? Like, to me, it's almost something that's like otherworldly, where it's out of your hands, and I don't know, like, where do you go from there?
Well, the aftermath for about probably a good 10 to 15 minutes, right. You know, it just the crowd was all on the floor, and, you know, there was just a buzz.
That's so awesome.
And then the other funny part that I again, will never forget is after about 10 minutes of the buzz, you know, people just mingling and, like, a lot of people just in shock, including myself. And then all of a sudden I see the student body kind of coaxing Jason over to where they sit. And all of a sudden I'm seeing him sign those placards of his face to give to students.
So, that's, you know, great.
He's doing autographs. And then the interesting thing is afterwards, we all, you know, our tradition was we would go into a classroom and kind of rehash about the game. And we actually had a chance to tie for the league championship that night. If the team ahead of us lost, and we heard, of course, you know, this day and age, you get on cell phones pretty quick. And we heard that the team that was ahead of us lost. So we actually tied for the league championships of all the kids. And, you know, then the only thing the purity of the event was really good, you know, because I, in my mind, I did it for all the right reasons. I didn't do it for any publicity. And you know, I called it in the newspaper because, you know, that's one of our duties, that, you know, call in the game. And the interesting thing is our newspaper didn't make much of a deal out of it. They didn't give them a headline. And, you know, they mentioned a little bit in the article. And I really thought that's where it would end. I was certainly numb with what I saw. The interesting thing, when I came to school the next day, of course, it was a buzz and all the kids were coming down the gym, and we must have shown that game film about 50 times that day. But what I didn't know is I got a call at the end of the day. Jason's speech pathologist, Jason told him that he might get in the game, came. That was the only game he had ever seen at Athena. Oh. And he was so touched by the game, he actually called one of the local TV stations and said, you got to come in and borrow the tape from the coach. He goes, this was the most unbelievable thing. And they did. And it got on TV that night. And then, of course, one of the local stations saw, you know, that it got so much following that we had three TV stations come in the next day. And then one of the local sports casters from one of the news stations called me it was a Friday night, and said, Coach, this is unbelievable. Can I send it out nationally? And I said, sure, if it can make an impact in the country, I think it'd be wonderful. And he did, and it was a quiet weekend. And we actually were going into our February break where the students are off from school, but we're starting our postseason tournament. So it was a quiet weekend, and I thought it was going to end there. And Monday morning, I'm getting up ready for practice because we practiced in the morning because we didn't have school. And just before I left, the phone rings. I pick it up at CBS Evening News, which, of course, doesn't call the house too often. And they said, Coach, we've heard about the game. We want to come in and do a story about it. And they came in, and by the end of the week on Friday, we had, before practice, we were interviewed by ESPN, Good Morning America, and CNN. And then ESPN stayed and did little 5-minute documentary, which ended, by the way, took about 5 hours to do. So,
of course,
it was unbelievable. And then our team ended up winning our tournament, so we as long as we kept playing, we had media. I mean, there was media at the school every day, you know, media at every game. I mean, in fact, when we won our sectional championship, we actually went to a restaurant after the game, and actually they had highlights of our game on ESPN. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
I mean, that's such a real amazing year, and you get to talk to, like, George Bush and
Pataki,
Oprah Winfrey. How do you kind of keep calm and mellow and still be an inspirational coach after having, like, the whole world looking at your team for an entire year?
Well, you know, it was obviously something that I couldn't prepare for, in the sense, you know, people laughed that you get 15 minutes of fame, and certainly I got a little more than that, because the phone was literally ringing off the hook for the next month after the game. But, you know, the one thing is that I really became principle-centered in my life, and, you know, that I knew that, you know, I was blessed to be part of something special, but it was a way that I could also give back and help people out by inspiring them through this story. And certainly, you know, the interesting part is, you know, I didn't know that much about autism. I actually work with the local autism group here in Rochester to support them. We started a fundraiser last year, and Jay Maxenbaugh with them. And the crazy thing about autism is it's one of the few things that I've seen where they can't figure out what's causing it. But when Jason was put in the game, I think it was like 1 in 125 babies born in the United States were on the spectrum, and now it's like 1 in 68. So it's staggering. And I've seen some other statistics where they think it's even less than that now. So it's, you know, it's pretty powerful. But for me, I have a big belief in God, and I think it was a way that God could give a message to, you know, people in the autism world that, you know, there is hope for people. And certainly, I think of what a valuable lesson I learned is, you know, we all can do more than we think we can. I'm not naive to say that, you know, we can all do this and that, but, you know, I think Jason's story, gave a lot of inspiration to a lot of people. So
now, Coach, it obviously not only inspired people. I mean, we're talking to you, like I said, 11 years later, on the same idea of this. But it also, like you said, you were not involved in any fundraising or awareness for autism before you had worked with JMAC, correct?
That is correct. Yeah, I knew very little about autism until Jason came into my life. So
now, let's fast forward to now. Do you still keep in touch with JMAC? What's going on with him?
Oh yeah, we're very close. In fact, I kid people, you know, because I travel a lot now speaking, and you know, sometimes I'm able to take Jason, but a lot of times I'm not. And you know, people come up to me after the event and say, "Well, do you ever see Jason anymore?" And I start laughing. I go, "Why are you laughing?" And I'll show him my phone. I've got like 10 texts and 2 phones and messages. So because he came back after 2 years of being away from our program after he graduated. He was in my office one day, and he had kind of a sad look on his face. He says, "Coach, I really missed the program. Can I come back and help out?" And I said, "Oh, sure." And so for my last 9 years, because I coached 10 years after that season, he was one of my volunteer assistants. And so we've done so much together, you know, on and off the court. And this year's been a little bit tougher on him because this is my first year that I haven't coached. And so I still, you know, talk to him a lot. I still follow, you know, my assistant took over, you know, my coaching position.
Right.
And the interesting thing, you know, we had a great run our last 3 years. We were 66-5, and we hadn't lost a league game in 36 games in a row. And my assistant took over, and the first game of the season was a league game they lost. And I'm like, oh, my God. But they've won 13 in a row, so I'm really happy for them.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, as a coach myself on high school level, Coach, you went to 2016. You ended with a record of, on your website, it says 428-221. Now, impressive. But the question I want to ask you, success like that, do you think it, would you attribute it to the athletes in the area you're working, or do you attribute it to like a building and successful program over the years and instilling like a winning attitude, or obviously both. But what do you think was the main reason for that turnaround from, like you said, you started, 17 losses in a row, first couple of seasons, rough, and turning it into a, it looks like a perennial winner.
Yeah, I think, certainly Jason's night was the proudest moment I've ever had in coaching. But as far as, I think the second proudest thing I've been in coaching is the fact that we were so consistent. In my last 20 years at the school, I finished that. We never had a losing season. And, we won, 11 division titles and 6 Section 5 titles. But to answer your question specifically, I think I became a better leader, and I think I was able to develop a culture by having a great staff. And, and I think that attracted kids wanting to be part of our program. We did a lot of work. We worked very hard in the off season, and we built a winning culture. And, I'm not naive. I know because I've coached bad teams and I've coached really good teams. You got to have good players. But I think to develop something that's really consistent, I think it is the ability to be, keep working and keep improving as a leader so that you can build that winning culture.
Yeah. 100%. Also, would you like an assistant coach job, JV soccer? Just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
I could use some help.
Yeah, Scott's record not as close to yours.
We're coming off a 3-win season, so I need you here, coach. But go ahead, Bert.
And so now that you've retired and you're doing more inspirational speaking, what do you see in a change in your lifestyle? Do you miss the competitiveness in basketball, or with this new opportunity, has it filled the hole,
the void?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? It's been mixed because I definitely miss the competitiveness of, coaching and building a team. Those are things that I did for a long time and I had great passion for. But I will say that the speaking has really filled a void because it's something that now I'm doing for the first time full time. So trying to figure out how to run a business. I have a small little team of people that I'm working with.
Your team's great, by the way. I should mention that.
Oh, thank you.
Your team is fantastic.
Yeah. So I'm very fortunate to have a good team around me. I really enjoy trying to make a difference in people's lives and getting a chance to travel and meet all these different people. And, I started with this inspirational keynote I've been doing for almost 11 years now. And then I, 3 years ago, I decided because I had studied leadership so extensively, I thought I could really share a lot of how to be a successful leader. So I've been doing a leadership keynote. As well, and I do some workshops on goal setting, and I've talked to a lot of different audiences, a lot of adult audiences, but also a lot of kid audiences. So and certainly mixed. So it's been I haven't missed it as much as I thought I would because I am doing something I'm very passionate about.
Yep.
I'd be lying to you if I say that I didn't miss it. I mean, I've seen our, my former school play, I think, 8 times. And nice. Fortunately, I've got to see them win all 8 games, so that's been nice. And I'm really happy for my former assistant that he's been able to, one of the things that I really, when I started to think about when I was going to retire, was I really wanted to take my assistant under my wing and share everything I could to make sure that the transition, that he could be as successful as he possibly could be.
Now, Coach, this is a great month to interview you. Because by the time this goes up, it's a perfect month because February is Autism Month. And you do a lot of speaking gigs, I guess kind of all over at this point. But it is Autism Month, and I know you are also working on a book that I guess has a lot of the stuff we've talked about in it. So what's in the future here for Coach Jim Johnson?
Well, I think the few things that I'm really one, I'd like to, now that I'm doing this full time, be able to speak more, because I was limited, especially during basketball season, where I rarely spoke just because of my other commitments. Two would be that I have a book called The Coach and a Miracle that we're re-releasing. It should be out in the next couple weeks, kind of as an anniversary. We updated some pictures, and also we updated the epilogue. So I'm excited to bring that out. It was a hardcover. We're going to bring it out as a paperback. And then the third thing is I'm working with this local autism organization called Autism Up in Rochester. And what I really like to do is be a advocate for autism all over the country. In fact, I just was talking to an organization about coming out to Las Vegas to do an event for them in April. So I really would like to try to spread and, working with any type of autism group. I mean, I've done some speeches in the autism spectrum, but most of my work has been, with businesses and schools. But I really would love to be, even get to the point of be a spokesperson for autism. I really want to give back. I mean, Jason's got a special place in my heart, and he's sort of like a second son to me. So I that's one of my big goals here in the future, is to be an advocate for autism.
Now, let me ask you something. With the success and the notoriety of, and just the message behind what happened that night, and your, you guys' relationship, has there been ever any talk about a book on just that, or a film on the experience, or TV, like even like a TV special, or did it just kind of stop there?
Well, we actually had one time we had a movie contract, but unfortunately it fizzled. So I'm hoping someday that we can reignite that. Jason actually had a book come out called The Game of His Life, and I had a book called, A Coach and a Miracle. So I'm considering writing one other book. I'd like to write another book on leadership.
Right.
So that's one of my other endeavors I'm looking to do. And certainly I hope there will be a movie. I just think it's such a wonderful, inspiring story that I think it would be a great thing, for people to see on the big screen. So hopefully someday that can happen.
All right, Coach.
That'd be certainly something.
If there is a movie, who's your ideal guy playing you? Come on now.
Well, it's funny. I kidded people that I'd love to have Kevin Costner. My wife would, of course, like Matthew McConaughey, and I'll probably end up with Danny DeVito.
I was going to say, if you said something like Ryan Gosling, this interview's over.
You are no leader, sir. I'm sorry.
I think Stallone would do the job.
Yeah. I guess one question I have, now that you've worked in building people's relationships and inspiring them, and also working with the autistic community, what would be your advice for anybody who works in the autistic community, as in when you're working with people? Do you just treat them as you do with all your other players? Is there anything special you feel that needs to be done? What's your thoughts on how to treat each situation?
Well, I think, it's all going to start with your heart, building relationships and treating everybody as a special person. I'm not naive to say that, because there's such different degrees of autism. There's some that are just severe, that are nonverbal and right. really struggle, to the point where, Jason, where, he has his challenges, but, he can live a somewhat, normal everyday life. So, for me personally, because I spend so much time and still spend a lot of time with Jason, I understand his challenges, but I don't treat him any different. When he screws up, I'm on him, and when he does something good, I praise him. So it's, so I think that part, you're still dealing with people. So, you want to praise them when they do something right, and certainly, critique them and try to help them, when they are going down the wrong path. So I think that part's consistent, but certainly, depending on because, you know, as I've been exposed, you know, I'm working with this local autism group. I mean, that there's people that are really severely autistic that, you know, need a lot of love and care. And the one thing that I think is going to be really powerful in trying to get help is, you know, that now that there's so many people being diagnosed on the spectrum, and we're getting a lot more knowledge and a lot more help in working with young people with autism. But one of the things that I think we're going to need a lot more help and services is for people that are, you know, are on the spectrum when they become adults.
I agree.
So,
Coach, I could talk to you for forever, but but seriously, so your journey, you know, just from being a basketball coach, you know, obviously you're a committed basketball coach, but I'm sure never in your wildest dreams did you go from, hey, I'm coaching high school to to being on ESPN and talking to Oprah and Jim Rome and George Bush and Hillary Clinton. And verbal shenanigans, of course, but
right out there.
But never. What is the message like when you the overall message or the theme in your speeches, in your motivational speaking, in your book? Like, what is the message you are trying to deliver through all of this? I know it's probably a broad message, but
yeah, I mean, like what square it right in just a moment, but just to give you a very quick breakdown, I have two speeches right now that I do, and I'm actually working on a third one on teamwork. But the ones I do right now, the one inspirational is called Dreams Really Do Come True, where I talk a lot about the JMAC story. I show a video, and I talk about six keys to making your dreams come true. And then my leadership, which I call Leadership Lessons from Half Court, I don't talk quite as much about the JMAC story, although right. I'm doing a leadership keynote to a business here in a few weeks that they wanted me to kind of combine. They wanted me to share the JMAC story, but share my leadership principles, and I talk about seven there. But to zero in, I think the most important thing, there are two factors that I think are really key. And number one is I think you have to understand yourself. And I think one of the books I read in my early 30s when I was really floundering, I said I really struggled early in my career, was that I didn't really understand my mission or purpose. And when I read The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Dr. Covey, you know, he talked about having your own personal mission statement, and I really got me to think because I really didn't understand why I was put on this earth, and now I'm very clear about that. And I think when I just felt that I was very clear about my personal mission, which is to be an outstanding role model that makes a positive difference in the world by helping others make their dreams come true, and when I became clear on that, it really helped me become focused on the type of person I wanted to be. And I think success attracts success. So, you know, as I became more successful, which leads me to the second thing, I think, you know, once you understand what you're all about, I think the other essential thing is really trying to continue to add value and to help others and, you know, in the life of service. And, you know, I didn't get that when I was early. I was all about myself. And when I really understood that, you know, the real purpose of life is to serve others and help make the world a better place. And then when I got very clear about that and really changed the philosophy, that it was amazing how things changed for me. And you know, and when I talk to people, you know, it's funny because as I travel the country and I'll ask people how many have their own personal mission statement, and very few hands go up. And I think that's where it starts. I think you got to know what you value and what you're all about before you can help others. So.
Yeah, and do you follow the NBA game now?
You know, I do to a certain degree. I mean, I'm always watching parts of games, and the only tough part for me, you know, being on the East Coast is I love how Golden State plays, but of course they're on so late. I don't get a chance to see them play that much. But I just love how they share the ball, and I've always been a Spurs, you know, Greg Popovich, you know, on how the essence of the, how they've played as a team. And you know, as I mentioned, you know, one of the proud things I am is that we became so consistently successful, and you do not see that in pro sports very often. So to see, you know, the Greg Popovich and then, you know, Bill Belichick, you know, guys have been able to be successful year in and year out, You know, those are people to study because it's like, you know, they, I mean, in the pros, it seems like guys are getting fired every like 2 or 3 years. So, you know, for people to last, you know, 20 years, they're doing something that, you know, we got to figure out what they're doing, what, you know, how they've been able to stay successful for that long.
So I guess my question is, as a Sixers fan and as you as an inspirational speaker, do you trust the process or can you help them out?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, do you want a job with the Sixers? You know? But
well, you know, it's interesting because I know they've had a lot of issues, but I think it's been intriguing that they've been able to stay with their coach. I know he's a Popovich assistant, our former assistant. So, but they seem to really like him, and so it looks like they're starting to at least head the right direction now.
4.5 from a playoff spot.
There you go.
Yeah. So,
Jim.
It's,
Coach, your story is absolutely you know, it is inspirational, and it's inspirational because it's not even really about you. It's about the journey you were taken on. People can be taken on. J-Mac was taken on, all that kind of stuff. And it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. If people want to check you out and go send you a message, maybe they hear this, maybe they see something online. Where can they go?
Sure. My website's CoachJimJohnson.com, and we have a ton of information. I have a bunch of videos on there. I do a weekly blog that they can sign up for. I also do a Life Lessons monthly newsletter. You know, that's all free, and you know, it has a bunch of different videos of, you know, it has the J-Mac video. I've got some videos of me speaking and that kind of thing. So if I can support anybody in any way, I'd be glad to do it.
Coach, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes. It really was an awesome interview. Thank you. Awesome.
Good really, stuff. Good stuff.
Really, like, I connect with it a lot just because of what I do in my day job, quote unquote. I'm using a lot of air quotes, but definitely connect.
That works on a podcast.
I know. The whole face for radio thing, yeah. Too, you know. Definitely connect with it a lot, and he's just like, It is amazing. Like, you think these insignificant things, all of a sudden one day, a video on someone's iPhone could flip it over, and mm-hmm. next thing you know, you're on Verbal Chanel. No, next thing you know, you're meeting the president. You know,
yeah.
It's just a weird, like, dynamic. I don't know. It's a weird thought to have.
It's amazing. I mean, he wasn't looking for anything. It was just more. I mean, just him talking about how he. He just kind of wished the local paper would have said a little bit more about it, not think of anything yep. else. And it took everybody saying, oh, can I send the local news, which goes to national news, which goes to ESPN. And
yep.
History's history.
Coach Jim Johnson, awesome episode. Let's take a quick break. What did you do this weekend? Anything going on?
This weekend.
I know you had a little tea. I saw you have.
Yeah. Yeah. I found a little tea house in Chester. I took the girlfriend there once before, and she loved it, and she yep. did lunch there before, and I took her again. So.
I never had, like, sat down and had official tea at a place. Like, I've,
yeah.
like, is it, like, I'm picturing, like, a lot of, like, doilies and flowers on the wall.
Well, for start, they're in Chester, and they got a very small room.
Right,
so
I'm picturing small. I'm picturing, like I tend to break chairs and stuff
yeah,
like that. Like,
they got
I
some
feel,
old furniture
yeah,
in
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
So it's like every time I put my arm down on the chair, so you always kind of hold yourself together and not lean too much into any of the furniture.
Yeah. And being like a big kind of guy, like, you know, tall guy, like, long arms. Like, I hate going into, like, antique shops and stuff like that with lots of glass. Like, I feel like I'm knock them down. Like, I feel like that's what, in my head, that's what a tea house would be like.
You imagine yourself as the bull.
In the China
in
shop.
China
yeah,
shop.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Except but you're leaving the bull with a bill. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, a bull with a credit
Scott,
card.
Scott, come over here. I don't want to. I'll just stay right here.
Yeah, a bull with a bill at the end of the visit for a smash, like, 1800s French plate that was
yeah.
worth a lot of money. Then,
mm-hmm.
all right, but like, so the did they have food at the tea place?
Oh yeah, they have. I mean, they have like dainty kind of tea food.
I'm
but
picturing
they,
a lot of biscotti. That's what I'm picturing.
No,
and scones.
Scones they have. Right. Scones they have are awesome.
See, I'm not a big scone guy.
But I'm not a scone guy either, getting it from like a Panera or something like that, because they're super dry, but they fresh bake it, and it's like a biscuit. It's moist, and it's got blueberries or strawberries or chocolate chips.
So it's very moist is what you're saying.
Yeah, very moist.
Extremely moist.
Moist.
So moist.
Deliciously
moist. It's the moistest
moist.
Scone in the world.
Mm-hmm. If I just want to shove my face in the moistest. That's what I want. We'll save that for later.
Yeah. So, you have the moistest scone.
Mm-hmm.
What about the environment? What's the etiquette there? Are you trying to be like proper, or are you just burly?
I just treat it like a regular restaurant.
All right, so you're loud.
I have my volume. I mean, when I go inside to like a restaurant, I know it's going to echo. I bring it down as much as I
debatable.
Can.
Debatable.
Yeah. That's just what I do, Scott.
So, like, is there proper tea drinkers there? Like, people, like...
Yeah, there's some older ladies you could tell are just into, like, the whole tea drinking thing. And, like, me and Izzy are there. We're just enjoying ourselves. It's a loose leaf tea, so you have to pour it through, like, the little mini...
like a strainer. Kind
strainer, of. Yep. Yeah. So, you don't get tea leaves in there, but, it's a pretty good place and all. I had me some, what did I have? Peach apricot.
Oh, you're a very peach apricot guy. You like moist scones and peach apricots.
Yeah. That's
great
just...
Great name for this
that's
episode.
That's just Berlou, you know. you go to an apricot farm, you'd be like, you know who'd love this? Yeah, let's call the Burls.
Sir, before I buy this, would you describe these apricots as moist? Because I have a guy, he needs moist. It just has
if
to
if you got dry apricots, I can't bring in my buyer. I'm sorry.
Listen.
That's a deal
And he'll
breaker.
Take a lot off of you, but are these moist?
Yeah.
Because I am not serving that man non-moist apricots.
Short story, I brought him a dry apricot once. He knocked out my orbital bone.
My knee hasn't worked since.
Yeah. True story. True story.
Okay. So what? Anything else after the tea? Anything go on this weekend? Exciting? Fun?
Went down to my sister's. Izzy played a little guitar there. They put a video up of her playing guitar on Facebook. A lot of people got good responses to that.
Nothing crazy?
Nothing insane, no. I was supposed to go to winery. The person canceled out, so we're going this Saturday. So that's Burles in a nutshell.
What is that, your new...
Burles in a nutshell.
Your new bit?
Yeah.
Burles in a nutshell.
Yep.
Moist scone. No. moist scones and apricots.
I imagine a Verbal Shenanigans t-shirt where it says the Burles in the front and then moist scones and apricots on the back.
First off, no thing with Verbal Shenanigans logo will ever have the word the Burles anywhere near it.
Well, I can make it happen.
You can make it happen, but I will sue you.
Your Honor, he wants the nothing we made on this.
Your Honor... Come on, he's trying to call himself the Burles. No one calls him it.
I'm going to get some work people to call you up.
Listen, you can't start a campaign to get... I have to hear it in natural conversation. Someone has to be like, what's up, the Burles?
No, they'll say, like,
the Burles? The Burles in the house or something like that. It's got to happen naturally. I'm not taking any like suspect callers like, hey, do you know the Burles? Cool guy, man. Like,
I am a friend, and I would like to inform you that he is the Bills.
Mention you like the podcast. Yeah. Is that Mike in the back?
I especially like the one about moistness.
I had two shows this weekend. Talk about polar opposite shows. Friday was in this it was a place in Roselle. It was a comedy club that...
You're doing the quotation marks, so right off the bat, I have to question that.
Quote-unquote comedy club.
It seems like as long as you put a flyer behind you, they declare it a comedy club.
And, these young comics... I went down and did their mic a bunch of times when I was living in Woodbridge.
All right.
They're young, they're hungry, they want it, but... They're probably 23, 22 years old, and did the show. I mean, there's a couple guys I knew, so it wasn't that bad. But the show, like, it was supposed to be an 8 o'clock start. Now, we know things start notorious late. 8:10, 8:15 is acceptable.
Yeah.
I mean, first off, there's like no heat in the room. It's in the back room of like a bar, and it's cold. And like there's people, there are a couple of tables did arrive at like 7:45. Okay, mm-hmm. So you know, maybe the whole audience eventually was 18, 20 people, something like that.
All right.
Which is fine, whatever.
Not bad.
But like one table's there, they're there, and like friends come strolling in. We probably don't get the show on the way till 8:45, 9 o'clock.
No.
Okay, real late. Okay,
yeah.
And then. The host, he seemed like a funny guy. But in between every comic, he's doing like 10 minutes between.
And it was
just so like, oh my God.
This show is mine kind of deals.
Yeah. Like, and I was up rather early on the show, but I was hanging out. My buddy Dan that I went to college with was on the show also. And he was on late. So I was like, oh, I'll stay for your set, you know. And it would be like. We were hanging in the back, like, oh, who's up? Like, blah, blah, blah's up. Like, what number is he? He's only four? Like, and then, the host is up, and the host will go on and do, like, 10, 12 minutes again. 10, 12 minutes. Just talking and being like, and it was just, like, poorly run. The headliner had another show in, like, Staten Island, like, an 11 o'clock show. And he's like, I have to do this and go. Like, this was an 8 o'clock show. I should have been on at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, like, just very... Very poorly run, and
now in these 10 minutes, does it sound like written stuff, or
no.
He just reaching for everything?
Just reaching.
Wacky hat guy.
Yeah, like not doing any like work really, just talking. And I know they're young, so I don't know if they see the whole picture.
They
of
don't
the show
see
as
the
a
business
show.
Part. Of
yeah,
it.
The show part of it. Like you want people to come back to this thing. Mm-hmm. Like you got to run a tighter ship. No,
yeah.
Listen. 90 minutes, an hour 40 is like the max I want my shows to go because after that, people start tuning out.
Yeah.
The whole leave people wanting more thing is as true as it gets. Like, you don't want to bombard people with 2 hours, 2.5 hours. It doesn't matter how funny you are. You don't care anymore.
Unless you're celebrating the Puerto Rican Day Parade, as we did once.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go
6 hours. It was
kind of
like that. It was like, oh my God, like this is still going. So that was... kind of a way. I guess I just treated it like an open mic. But
mm-hmm.
And then Saturday, I did a show. I went down to Woodbridge. Obi's killing himself. Okay, buddy?
Yeah, we'll be. He's like, yeah, it's just me. I'm cool, Daddy.
So this is the dog chokes on a bone or something. So... Saturday, I go down to Woodbridge, visit my dad, and I had a show in Milford.
Okay.
It was at a firehouse, and it was like a 200-person fundraiser, and that was a lot of fun. It was one of Rocco's shows, and it was really, really good receptive crowd. The headliner, I don't know, you ever worked with Joey Cola before?
No, I haven't heard that.
Awesome. Name. Like, I guess he's been around forever. He's telling us stories how him and Andrew Dice Clay got into a fight in, like, in the 80s, and then they met again in the 90s, and, like, the fight started again. And then, like, it's, like, been over, like, every 10 years they see each other.
That,
like,
that's a weird gap. That's around when he had that UPN show, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I don't know. But
it's hard to get in a fight with him after that.
Yeah, that was a really that was a good show. And then the crowd was, like, electric, and it was... really good. Besides, I mean, there was a couple like drunk ass girls, and I was talking through the whole set. Like my set was only like 8 minutes, so it wasn't that bad. But mm-hmm. during the headliner and like the feature, it was just like this one table, like shut up,
yeah.
Like go outside or leave. Like you don't have to be here. Like this one girl's so oblivious to anything around her. Like the tables behind her were like, come on. She's just screaming about her plans on Friday and what they're going to do. Like,
because that's why those 200 people showed up. They want to know what Valerie's doing.
Yeah, I know. Fucking Valerie. You know?
Yeah.
But,
you going to the strip mall, Valerie? Good for you.
Yeah.
Get to that dollar store? Great. Yeah.
Overall, I mean, the shows were good. That show was good. So it was like polar opposites. Like, you know, 8 people in a cold room, 200 people in a hot crowd. So it's just like a constant reminder that this is always changing. Yeah, I mean, I guess before we get out of here, it'd be hard to not address the two things. One, the Emperor Trump is in full effect.
Mm.
Full effect.
Let's make laws. Let's not tell anybody about it. Huh?
Well, all the statements I made in every podcast leading up to this was kind of like, let's see what happens. I don't think he's going to be bad at all. I don't think he's going to do anything.
I figured my first moment would be about 4 months in at the earliest.
Yeah. Like, remember when we're like, it's just going to be status quo?
Yeah.
Maybe we were wrong. I'm going with maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe we overshot. Maybe this guy is that bad.
Yeah, yeah. I will still say I'm still somewhat optimistic with possibilities.
Me too, me too.
I mean, sure. I'm kind of like, okay, you seem to be doing this other stuff a lot. Why didn't you do the one thing we all were excited about, the job making
situation? Oh, you mean the wall and no Muslims and all those women having babies? Screw them.
You mean the jobs. The thing that gives me money.
Not all the things I stand for.
Maybe one of them in the middle, but I forget which one.
No. The jobs thing. Like, this man is... I'm kind of at a loss for words sometimes with this guy.
It's getting to the point where I think he just wakes up, grabs a piece of paper out of a bag, and say, yep, that's what I'm doing today.
Which reminds me, we are recording on Tuesday. At 8 o'clock, he'd be supposed...
Yeah, he already announced his judge.
Who's Gorsuch?
He's like a 46-year-old conservative. He's one of the youngest people to get nominated in the court of a century, so he'll be in there for a while.
Hopefully young equals, like, at least open-minded.
Remember, that's why the Republicans were holding Obama from putting in somebody to hold that spot for somebody of their own. So, I mean, I don't know anything about him. I'm not going to act like, oh, this guy's worse than Hitler.
I would be the guy that would have to show up to a protest, not with a poster, but with a whiteboard, because I have to look around and like write different things.
I'd put "we hate" and then like an underline, and I would just hope I have enough space.
I would need a dry erase board to go to a protest.
Scott, I don't know what we're protesting, but I broke a Starbucks window.
This guy is out of his mind, I think. It's not really like, hey, say he signed these things over time. It's the way he goes about doing things. It's still insane. Like, I'm just going to sign them. I don't care what anybody says. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to address things. I'm going to fire my, the attorney general. Like, I'm just going to do whatever I want. Yeah. And, of course, things will probably balance out with the backlash he gets from a lot of it. But, man, is this guy crazy.
Yeah, it was really interesting how he said, yeah, when I signed the bill yesterday, everything went terrific, everything's great, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, even if you thought that, it's been a day. You might want to give it a little bit more time before you pat yourself on the back.
Listen, the 24-hour rule, like, before you even speak about something or something, think a little bit and then come back with a statement. You don't...
But he's still a... he's still a reality TV show guy. I mean, today he was doing... you had something with Rudy Giuliani. He's like, oh, all the press come out, watch us talk and stuff like that. It's like,
First off, even this thing, the Supreme Court pick, he makes it like LeBron James when he was going to the Heat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm taking my talents to South Beach. You make a special. The guy's thinking like a TV executive.
Yeah.
Like, let's get ratings. You know, like,
well, that's what he brags about.
I know. It's bad, man. I'm not anything either way. I just think this is not how you want to be viewed in the rest of the world, to be honest. Like, this crazy man, like, that just...
Yeah, I mean, already the other countries are starting to talk already. That's the worst part.
I feel like we lost. Like, America lost something by him winning. Man, they really slipped up this time.
I hope it shows both sides and all... Hard to say what the Republic. You got to get 3 years in to kind of decide, all right, what you're going to do with him. But hopefully the Democrats got in their head, okay, we can't just put out status quo what we want to put in there and just expect to say, oh, Republicans are bad and win.
Yeah. I thought things would die down. It just makes me like.
Social
media is worse than ever.
We got 1,000 some more days of this, buddy.
Yeah.
Sit back and relax.
Well, and then whatever happens next is going to be just as bad. This ain't going away. Social media is just going to get unbearable. So
the people will be happy to see him. The Patriots.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, before we go, because this episode would be released
after the Super Bowl?
Like 3 days after the Super Bowl.
All right.
Super Bowl predictions and scores. Okay, this would be cool because if we come close, it's already on tape.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So we're going into the future here now, guys. We're going to predict the scores. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
I will go first.
Okay.
I said it from the second Tom Brady got suspended. New England's just going to sit back and say, we're going to make you give us a trophy, and I think that's what's going to happen. Atlanta's got some great offensive weapons. They got a total team where I could say, no, regardless of what happens this year, I fear them next year. But in the end, they just find their ways. They have their system, and they just make sure the world hates them. Tom Brady's going to take them to another one. New England 34, Atlanta 24.
I swear on my dead grandmother, who meant the world to me, the identical pick. I swear on every one of these episodes, it can go away. If I'm lying, they could have deleted all the episodes and never be heard again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Some people do that.
34-24 was exactly what I was going to say. New England Patriots. Oh, my God. That's kind of creepy.
Huh. Now what?
Now there's no discussion.
Well, I was weird. A little off, but sure was Scott.
Holy crap. That's exactly what I... Wow. I don't really know what to say other than let's end this thing.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll be right. One of the guys I work with, he lost a bet to me. Giants Chargers record for the year. We bet a month of coffee. So I got
nice.
I got a month of coffee. Ooh. It just ended today. I'm a little upset about it. But
you're going to get in your car that's still revving and I'll get those 24 coffee cups out.
You know, like I'm starting to think maybe maybe Trump's wrong. Maybe this country's already safe. My car is just set there.
Yeah, that's
no
true.
One stole it.
Not one Muslim came by and took Scott Brennan's pickup truck.
Not one.
You know why? They're still in Iran and Somalia.
Yeah. But yeah. I had a call. You get used to when someone brings you coffee every day at a certain time. You're like, this is nice. This is.
Do you make them do it in front of your like your students?
No.
That'd be awesome. And oh look, kids, it's Mr. Blacksmith. What are you doing here, Mr. Blacksmith? Here's your coffee. What's that? The children can't hear you.
Maybe a little louder this time. Berlu, let's get out of here. Anything to promote?
I'll promote my Facebook page because Walking Dead is coming back February 12th, and along with it, tonight on The Walking Dead, facebook.com/theberl721.
Conveniently enough, February 12th, I am performing with Sean Lynch, who is on The Walking Dead, on the day The Walking Dead comes back. So let's tie it all together at Tierney's in Montclair. I got him gig. We're also raising money for his association where they help kids who had spinal and brain cancer and perform stand-up comedy and write things like that. So that is a
really
perfect
cool.
segue.
Yeah, I'll be in Florida then. Like to meet him someday, but
yeah. Sean Lynch, and then I also have Sean on one of the Tap House shows in the future. But the other thing is Tap House 15 on February 23rd. Eddie Brill is headlining. Come on out, make reservations. There's not many tickets left, so let's get out of here. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the win at your back. Thank you, Coach Jim Johnson.
And that other guy we're not going to talk about.
Who, you?
Hey, everybody loves Burles.